Welcome to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School, so listen, learn, enjoy, and share.
So, welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. Small businesses across the country are struggling to keep up with the government's drive to make Britain net zero by 2050. Research by the Santander Bank has shown that thousands of businesses just don't believe they have the resources to become more environmentally sustainable. Today's guests have both taken on leadership roles to help business meet that challenge. Wendy Huell is head of ESG and climate change at Santander Corporate and Commercial Bank. Polly Harold is senior public policy manager also at Santander. They are both passionate about the need for business to become more sustainable and for modern leaders to recognise the crucial role they play in tackling climate change. Wendy, Polly, welcome to this special edition of the NBS Business Leaders Podcast.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So tell us about yourselves and what you do. So let's start with you, Wendy.
So as you said, I'm head of ESG and climate change at Santander Corporate and Commercial Bank. I have been in the role just over 3 years, but have always done corporate social responsibility on the side of my desk throughout my very long banking career. I have always been curious about businesses, and that has really helped me go into this role about sustainability, because we really have to understand every single part of a business if they're going to be resilient against climate change.
But you're essentially by trade a corporate banker.
I certainly am.
Okay, thank you. Polly.
I'm not a corporate banker by trade. I'm actually an ex-career civil servant. I've been with Santander for about 2 years now, and I work in our public affairs and public policy team leading on sustainability policy. And what that means is I essentially look at how the government, their actions, decisions impact our operating environment and what we need to see from public policy to become a more sustainable and responsible business.
Okay, great stuff. I think everybody can see around us that the climate, the weather is changing radically and rapidly. Obviously here in Britain, it's getting wetter, it's getting warmer, it's becoming more extreme. But I think it's still worth me asking you the question, why is it important for business to show leadership on the issue of climate change? Wendy.
So as you're right, you know, today we're sitting in Nottingham and it's a fairly warm day. You know, a few weeks ago, it was heavily pouring with rain. Now, that is a symptom of climate change, and we're seeing right across the globe the impact of that weather. We've also got a government target that wishes to get all of the UK to net zero by 2050. That, for me, is in a very short period of time. For probably some youngsters, they'll be thinking, gosh, I haven't been born for 25 years. What do you mean it's a very short period of time? But because the change is happening so quickly, we really need to take businesses on that journey. We need to make sure that they build resilience so that they can adapt their businesses to ensure that they can continue to sell the products and services that they're doing already.
So what you're actually saying is if they're going to have a business future, even an immediate business future, they need to jump on board.
That's right. And they'll be finding that if they're working with large corporates, they will already be asking them, where are you on that journey? We know that the NHS has already got this in their tenders and is asking all of their suppliers, where are you on the journey and what are you doing to actually reduce your emissions? And if you're not on that journey with them, then you may not win that tender going forward. And it's not just the NHS. We're seeing that in a lot of large corporates at the present time.
Your own research at Santander, and I think you were involved with this, Polly, showed that most businesses agree that operating more sustainably is the right thing to do, but it also highlights that most small businesses in Britain are struggling to get on board. They say they don't have the time, they don't have the money, they don't have the resource, and they're prioritising their short-term survival. How do you persuade them to take a longer, broader view?
That's definitely Wendy's bag. But just to kind of paint the picture of our research, and as you mentioned, we've done some polling into SMEs, how they feel about their transition to net zero. So SMEs actually make up over 99% of UK private sector businesses, of which around three quarters are sole traders. And SMEs, again, I'm sure preaching to people know this, will range anything from a medium-sized business, around 250 people, to those one-person sole traders. Lots of different issues faced by those different groups. And overall, these SMEs account for between 43 and 53% of UK greenhouse gas emissions. So as Wendy said, it's really important that we support them on a journey to become more sustainable, not just for their business resilience, but actually for the overall transition of the UK economy to net zero. But Wendy, you're probably better place to talk about how we support them.
Indeed. But there are two things there. There's just the last thing you said there. This is not just to save the planet, but it's also in terms of making them sustainable businesses themselves and making sure that they have a business future.
That's exactly right. So whether you use the word sustainability or resilience, you know, for me, there are two definitions. Sustainability, as part of the UN Brundtland Commission, talks about ensuring that we do no harm for future generations. But also, if you go and look in any of the Oxford dictionaries, the Cambridge dictionaries, you talk about sustainable. That's actually, how do you just make sure that your business is going to actually be able to deal with all the challenges that are faced from it? So whether that's they're facing from climate change, whether they're impacted by the current conflicts that are going on in Ukraine and in Gaza, you know, these are big challenges. We've already seen what happened with Ukraine and the impact on sunflower oil. You know, sunflower oil, none of us actually realise that Ukraine produced 50% of all the sunflower seeds that are used in Western Europe. So suddenly you've got to think, oh, where am I getting my oil from? What impact is that going to have? So it has a real big challenge. If we take a small business such as a fish and chip shop, the costs that have risen in that fish and chip shop are staggering. One is seeing the impact of the energy prices have gone up significantly. Two is actually the cost of fish. But three is actually finding the fish. We know that there are big challenges out in the North Sea with regards to fish quotas, with regards to the impact on the cod. So once what was a traditional cheap meal is now very, very expensive. And so all of those impacts into something that we think is something just like bread and butter, you know, you expect your fish and chip shop to be there, but they are really challenged. And what we're saying to businesses is, yes, this is a symptom of climate change, but let's see how we can work with you to think out how you can work it, make a difference.
Okay, so let's use that example, because my mother could not survive if she didn't have fish and chips at least three times a week. So what advice would you give the small business person who has traditionally just got on and it's been fine, and they know what the turnover is going to be, they know how much they're going to make from a small business, perhaps passed through the generations? They came to you and they said, "What can we do? What should we do? How would you be able to help?" Perhaps.
So the key area is actually asking them to think about every part of their business. And it would be a case that perhaps we, you know, from a banking perspective, start off with looking at their accounts, looking at, you know, where they get their income from. So ensuring they're getting the footfall to come and do it, but then actually looking at every aspect of the cost of goods sold. So what's the price of the fish? Is that fish sustainable? Are they using cod? Are they using haddock? Can they use another fish that perhaps is in better quantity and availability, but also perhaps cheaper to use? But then also, one of the big challenges is from a story that was on the BBC only a few weeks ago. This fish and chip shop's price of potatoes went up from £6 a bag of potatoes up to £22. That's a hell of a cost that they've got to bear. Now, I don't know what the adaptation is for potatoes, but that sourcing is a really big challenge. So how can they deal with that challenge is a big one, but it's also bringing it to the fore. The other aspect is actually one of the big ones will be energy. So thinking about how they can work with either their own premises, if they own them, or working with the landlord to say, what energy efficiency can I put in? That could be thinking about how long the fryers are on, are they in the most up-to-date equipment, but also can they get better electricity rates? Could they put some solar panels? How can they deal with all of those things? Now, that's a long shopping list. So we actually need to find a way to work with them, break it all down to make it manageable so that they can affect a change.
I think there's a role for government here as well. So in our research, as well as kind of how businesses feel about their path to net zero, we looked specifically at what the role for government should be and how they should support small and medium-sized businesses. So interestingly, 58% of SMEs think that government are the most responsible organisation for ensuring that their portfolios align to net zero. We looked at banks as well. We looked at the businesses themselves. Overwhelmingly, it was government. There are a few different things that businesses feel that government could do to support them. So grants being the biggest. So 62% of respondents want to see more grant funding from government.
That's so, simple handouts, and obviously times are tough.
Exactly. So as you said, this could be a one-off voucher to invest in measures to support energy efficiency. There's an awareness raising piece as well. So how can we build up that knowledge of what businesses need to do? As Wendy said, it's a real challenge, particularly among sole traders. That could take the form of sustainability workshops or climate hubs. And then there's something around the kind of bigger picture. What's the plan for SMEs in the government's path to net zero? What's the strategy? We haven't really seen policy certainty or sectoral roadmaps that necessarily bring in specifically the role of SMEs. So that's also really, really important. So people can plan for the future when they're looking at their business and their resilience.
So does the government take this sufficiently seriously? Because I've lost count of the number of people I've sat and say, I'm not going to push you on a political on a political opinion, I promise, but who have said, look, the government set this target, and then they've said, right, get on with it. And one of the figures you just quoted there, 99% of enterprises are SMEs. Well, wait a minute, that surely those people have to be brought along with you.
Well, that's the beauty of Polly's role. And throughout my corporate banking career, I think the last few years, whilst I've been involved in sustainability, to see the advocacy, the engagement, whether no matter which party it has been key. How can we tell the story of our SMEs, of our personal clients, of our large corporates, as to how we can help them make a difference? And for me, this is all about collaboration. None of us can do this on our own. You know, individuals can take some small steps, but businesses have to work together. We have to work with government. We have to work with yourselves. And, you know, the whole reason why we're at the university today is actually to find a way to collaborate. Who has a good interaction with small businesses? How can we raise that education and awareness to really make a difference? Because we cannot do it individually, whether that be the banks or whether that be universities or government, but if we all work together and make a difference. And one of the things is that, you know, one thing that has been talked about is industrial strategy. Businesses are saying they want certainty. They just want to know that for the next period of time, there's not going to be any changes so that they can then invest in their businesses. But if we have conflicting messages, then actually businesses are going to say, I just don't want to invest in this anymore. And we saw that when the EPCs for letting property.
EPC, sorry.
Sorry, energy performance certificates. There was a requirement that properties that were going to be let by a private land board would have to have an EPC C by 2027, 2028. The last government removed that requirement. So the incentive to actually affect that change, which would mean that people in those properties would have better homes, better insulation, cheaper energy, was all removed. So clarity is key to be able to take businesses on a journey and to help everybody do that.
Okay. And I think not to be drawn in on your, is government taking this seriously, but we have seen some really positive signs from the new government, obviously clean power by 2030 being one of their five key missions. We've seen early action taken on the National Wealth Fund, as Wendy said, the industrial strategy, they've got their warm homes plan. We're yet to see detail on those announcements, but they're making all the right signals that this is being taken seriously and will be a key mission for this government over the next 5 years.
Okay, so you're hopeful?
Hopeful, always.
Always hopeful. So let me carry on down this road and talk about the oft-quoted argument about foreign competition, because off microphone, we were talking about this earlier, but certainly one of the leaders who we have had on recently here, he runs a slate manufacturer on a beautiful mountain in the Lake District. He has impeccable green credentials. He even has hydroelectric power creating his electricity. Small firm doing very well, except for the fact that he is absolutely adamant he is being forced out of business by the quantities of cheap slate coming over from China, where, of course, they don't have similar net zero targets. What might you say to him, Wendy?
So China will have its own net zero targets. Whilst it's not signed up to the Paris Agreement for 2050, it is looking at 2060 or 2070. I'm sorry, I haven't got that figure to hand. So they are working hard to reduce their emissions. But businesses will be seeing new legislation coming in. We've got the Carbon Border Accounting Mechanism, which is coming in Europe this year. In 2 years' time, it will come into the UK. So that will start to have a cost of carbon attached to it. So businesses will start having to account for that. So that would be a significant change. Also, we have seen since COVID that businesses are thinking about, should I really have my supply chain around the other side of the world? Because can I guarantee supply? We saw many garden centres really struggle with the supplying of garden furniture during COVID because of the challenges with regards to the supply chain. We've also seen problems with the Panama Canal. The fifth wettest country in the world was suffering from a drought, and therefore costs of transport was having a big impact on moving goods. So I think there will be changes, but we still are a globalised society at the present time. So at present, there will be those challenges that we'll have to face into.
I think there's also a consumer angle here. So during the COVID pandemic, we obviously saw a rise in the kind of shop local, support local businesses side. And I've done numerous pieces of public polling this year on topics ranging from skills and productivity to electric vehicles. And we often split those research results by age. And overwhelmingly, you can see that younger generations, millennials, care more and more about the environment and taking that into consideration with decisions. So I think that's an important angle to think about as well when we think about local manufacturing, is what does the consumer think and how will businesses respond to that?
And so the consumer audience is shifting, and it's shifting towards having goods that have greener credentials.
Exactly.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA to explore the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show. Wendy, I read something you wrote more than 2 years ago about the financial sector playing a critical role in helping smaller businesses embrace net zero. So let's just talk a bit about that. So your own organisation and your competitors, what are you doing? What more can you do?
So as borne out by the research, businesses don't know where to start. So education and awareness and talking about this every day is really, really important to understanding the challenges that our businesses are facing. We know that, you know, there is the big impacts of Brexit, COVID, etc. on those businesses, but we need to raise with them exactly how they think they're going to be surviving, how they're going to create a resilient business. So having good conversations with them, and what's really interesting is when you start on that sustainability journey with them, a lot of businesses have already thought about this. They are being pressured by their employees or by their suppliers, and they want to share what they've done. We in Santander, we have got the green products that we can provide for funding, but what's key is we've been bringing businesses together to talk about their wins, their frustrations, what they've been able to do. Some great stories about putting sensors on baking ovens and finding out that the bakers used to actually turn on the ovens at midnight before they actually started baking at 4 o'clock in the morning. And when they were asked, why do you do that? They were told, well, because we've already done it. What they failed to realise is when the ovens were actually replaced recently, they warm up within half an hour. So just imagine the shock, horror, all that energy. And
so presumably you're talking several thousand pounds every quarter or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's genuine financial gain for companies who take this sort of thing on board.
Definitely. So actually, the energy crisis has made businesses really think about, how do I use my energy? Where am I using it? What time am I using it? And actually taking steps, whether it's LED light bulbs, whether it's insulation, really looking at every aspect of the business, they can actually reduce the costs, and at the same time, they're reducing the carbon footprint. So it really makes a difference. As Polly says, consumers are looking at the difference that they want from their businesses. So there's an imperative around that that can make a difference. But sharing those stories, but if a large corporate has actually got to get to net zero, it needs to talk to its supply chain. You know, Polly has said about SMEs, 99% of all businesses. So in a large corporate supply chain, there will be lots of SMEs. And the best thing that they can do is get them all around the table and share the problem, because there will be learnings, much like the learnings from the bakers, because they've always done it. They will also have insight as to things that they believe could be done, but nobody's ever asked their opinion. But if you get them all around the table, it's amazing how powerful that is.
Okay. And is this happening increasingly? Is there a real drive for it? Do you perceive? I mean, I read something that you'd written 2 years ago. And has it come on since then? Has it?
Yeah. We've, this year, I've spoken with a number of businesses, and they've all been really grateful for us, whether we've done one-on-one conversations where I've been given an hour and 2 hours later we're still talking, to putting a group of 10 businesses around a table, sharing best practice, saying, oh, we thought it wouldn't work, or we're only going to do this for a period of time, and what a difference it's made. To other businesses that are actually making that have actually built their business around a sustainability story. And one of the most, I'm in a very privileged position. At Santander, we have the Breakthrough Programme where we mentor women in business. I have been paired up with an amazing young lady who has set out a business called Recycle Lab to actually look at recycling the plastic in medical devices. And therefore, in working with her, effectively, I'm putting all my knowledge into practice and learning actually what's working and what's not working.
So that's a good example. Tell us about that. Where is she based, and what is she doing in?
So she is very young, very passionate, very enthused. She is based down in Oxfordshire, but she used to work in medical labs and was horrified to see how single-use devices were literally being thrown away and normally getting incinerated. So she has had to go back in, educate scientists to say, you put them in that box, not that box. She will come along, and she is actually buying equipment so that she can actually change that plastic into what I call coffee granules, because it's just the best way I can describe it.
That's what it looks like.
That's what it looks like. Or into flakes. And then she's looking at how she can then get plastic manufacturers to use this to perhaps recycle to make it into another product. But it's absolutely fascinating, and is a true example of actually, here's a problem, what can we do to solve it? But she is amazing.
Of course, until she came along, they hadn't even realised they had a problem.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, and presumably, if I think that through, those granules or flakes that you talk about are being sold on?
That's the aim. So to be, and hopefully they can be reused to create the pipettes or whatever they're using, the trays, to make that real difference.
So this is a classic win-win situation. So from your point of view, it's a much greener and eco-friendly way of doing it. But similarly, the business was tossing stuff away, and now it can make a few bob from it.
Yeah, effectively, yeah. And it's interesting, because of my whole career of being a corporate banker, you've normally said, well, have you thought about putting your prices up? Now it's a case of, have you tried putting your prices up? And then getting the feedback as to, God, it was really scary to put my prices up. And do you know what? Everyone's gone with it, you know. And
is that because they were understanding why you were putting your prices
that's
up?
That's right, yeah. But it's interesting for somebody who's been in a banking role to actually be providing this mentoring and seeing the challenges, but also how you can make a difference. And one of the very interesting things was she's been doing effectively cold calling, sending out the pallets that are recycled in a tube, which has got marketing for the business that she's trying to achieve. She went out to 20 companies and she got two come back to her who wanted to do business with her. That's an incredible success rate. Normally, you know, if we're in banking, we phone up and say, could we come and talk to you? It takes a lot of phone calls to be able to get to that success.
Yes, I think I recognise that. So 10% of the first 20 people she approached said, yes, let's do business. That's very, very good, isn't it?
It is, which shows there's a demand and shows that people are willing to see what they can do to make a difference to their business.
And that's it. That's because it's an environmentally sound business and people could see how it was going to help the world as well as their own P&L.
And also to identify a challenge that they perhaps hadn't even thought about. But if they were then working with the NHS, it comes back to that fact that if you're tendering to do the contracts to do the research, you can say, well, actually, we've dealt with our waste and this is one of the things that we're doing.
Great stuff. So this actually is a podcast about leadership, about business leadership, about organisational leadership, about thought leadership. So how is the drive to net zero, do you think, changing how modern leaders think and how their leadership is going?
So I think when I think about leadership, I think about the skills that we need to transition to net zero and how you lead the workforce through that change. So I recently authored a report with some of my colleagues called Tomorrow Skills, which is looking at the skills that we need to transition to net zero, to a more digital economy, and also to manage in kind of post-COVID ways of working. And we polled people for it. And 48% of people think that climate change will have an impact on their job in the future. In reality, it's much, much higher than that. And there's definitely a leadership role to think about how do we support people on that journey, not just in, for example, your high emitting sectors. I know we've talked about steel on this podcast. How do we support people who are working in steel plants to perhaps transition to a job in clean energy? You've got the infrastructure, you've got the people. It kind of makes sense to do it. But also in kind of softer cross-sectoral roles, so jobs like Wendy and mine, who aren't necessarily on the ground, but looking at kind of climate change strategy, data skills, communications. So I think there's a leadership role and opportunity there in the skilling, which is really, really interesting, but we don't necessarily have time to get into in depth.
Okay, right. So you're dead right, because and finally, there's a lot of evidence that that young people are not very optimistic about the future. I know we've been fairly upbeat in all this in our last 20 minutes of conversation, but you know they're a bit worried. They're talking about how climate change will definitely influence what they choose to do in their work and where they choose to live, et cetera, et cetera. What would you say to them to perhaps reassure them, both of you, Wendy?
That's a really tough question. I think it is a case that we need to have optimism, that to go back to the last question, this is the biggest behavioural change project the world has ever seen, because we all have to change our own habits if we all want to make a difference. So it's saying, though, that actually think about how you can, the role that you want to go into, everybody can bring a sustainability angle. Polly's talked about the skills we need, but every single business needs to think about every single aspect as to what's impacted by the sustainability element, the climate change element, and where they can make a difference. So I passionately believe that effectively, I'm seeking to make myself redundant, that our roles won't necessarily still be here in 10, 15, 20 years' time. There'll be specialists with regards to looking at the non-financial disclosures, looking at the data, looking at the CO2 emissions. But actually, to embed sustainability, it should actually be part of the mitigants of risks that we're looking at, but also the opportunities that we're looking at. So when you're thinking about your product, you've thought about actually all the impacts of the climate on it, the energy that you're utilising, the ingredients, the products that you're using to make it, would have all been taken into account, so that everything that gets sold is already covered by that carbon footprint.
Right. So you think there are as many opportunities as there are negatives, perhaps?
There has to be. Because if there's all negatives, then we're never going to solve the problem. And I think what young people are doing is pushing us to really think about this hard. And I think it's an anecdotal story, so I might have it wrong. But as I understand it, McDonald's have actually put their recycling bins at a far lower height because young children will get their parents to spend 40 seconds longer in McDonald's whilst they sort out which packaging goes into which recycling bin.
So that's a classic opportunity.
Exactly.
It is. Polly?
I'd really just echo what Wendy said, linking it to the skills point. The Climate Change Committee have estimated that there'll be around 135,000 to 725,000 new jobs in existing and emerging low carbon sectors over the next few years, or until 2030. That's a huge opportunity for people. So consider sustainable roles, think about the skills you need to build to transition to net zero, and look broadly at what you can do and what you can be in the future and become part of the change.
Great stuff. Wendy Hewell, Polly Harold, thanks very, very much for joining us here on the Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of the NBS Business Leaders Podcast with Wendy Hewell and Polly Harold from Santander, listen to previous shows with the former CEO of ASOS, Nick Beaton, the former chairman and chief exec of Experian, Sir John Peace, and the chief marketing officer of Boots UK, Peter Markey. This episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast was produced for Nottingham Trent University by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.